Good evening and welcome to Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I'm your host, Bathsheba Monk. I'm thrilled to have as my guest tonight Barbara Kruger. Like most of us, I read Barbara's poems before I ever met her because her poems are everywhere. And when I did meet her, finally, I'm happy to report that for a genius, she is totally charming and gracious. Welcome to the show, Barbara.
Wow, what an introduction.
I want to talk to you today about the new anthology of poems that you were in called The Liberal Media Made Me Do It, Poetic Responses to NPR and PBS Stories, which was edited by Robbie Nestor. But first, I want to give people an idea of just how well-published you are and how lucky we are to have you in the Lehigh Valley. Barbara's poems have appeared in magazines such as the Green Mountain Review, the Holland's Critic, the Christian Science Monitor, Smartish Paste, the Beloit Poetry Journal, Nimrod, the Denver Quarterly, the Tampa Review, and I can go on and on about where you've appeared. And I'm on your Facebook feed, so I see things coming in all the time, so I know about that. You're very well rewarded and awarded for your poetry. And your poems have been read on the BBC, on the Australian Broadcasting Company, and by Garrison Keillor on the Writer's Almanac, which is on NPR, right?
Yeah. It's Minnesota Public Radio, but then it's picked up by local NPR stations.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're a favorite of his, I see, as well as Ted Kooser's column, American Life and Poetry. And you've also read your poems in the Poetry at Noon series at the Library of Congress. Is that right?
Yeah, that was a really fabulous space to read.
Okay, so we're very, very happy to have you here today. And before we talk about The Liberal Media Made Me Do It, I want to talk about you. We don't get a chance to talk to many poets on the show, so I want to find out, like, when was that moment in your life when you said, "I guess I'm a poet."
I don't know that I'm ready to say that yet.
Oh, okay.
Robert Frost felt that that was something someone else should award to you, usually after your death.
Oh, really?
But, at a certain point, I realized this is what I was doing. I was writing poem after poem after poem, and I wasn't writing anything else. Mm-hmm. So,
have you tried other forms, like fiction or essays? Or
I did dabble in fiction really early on, and my husband, we're going to be married 40 years next summer.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Sent me to a writer's conference instead of buying me an engagement ring.
All right.
Give me the choice. I picked the writer's conference. So I brought some poetry. I brought some fiction. And the man who led the fiction workshop was just so hypercritical that I kind of walked out of there never wanting to try my hand at fiction ever again.
Uh-huh.
Which, for me as a teacher now, is the antithesis of what I ever want to do. Because everyone starts at different levels. You don't know where someone's going to go on mm-hmm. from. So I think you never want to be that discouraging voice in the classroom.
Right.
But he discouraged the heck out of me.
Oh, really? Do you find that the impulse to write a poem is the same as the impulse to write a story?
Since I never really worked hard at writing stories, I really was only just beginning. I'm not sure I've got a good answer to that. But I think that probably is where my impulse comes from, is to write short, is my bent is towards poetry, and towards mm-hmm. lyric poetry particularly, which is not especially in favor right now. This mm-hmm. is the age of the narrative. People like stories.
Right. Your poetry doesn't rhyme, but it does have a real lyricism to it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I actually have, it sounds like dabbling in the occult, but I have dabbled in form. I have maybe 5% of my work might be, is received forms, sonnets, and other kinds of received forms, but I don't in general rhyme. Mm-hmm.
Sounds musical, though, to
thank
me.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you. I'm very, very, my ear is open for musical sounds. And that's something, particularly in revision, that's what I'm always trying to do is enhance the musical sounds of a poem. Mm-hmm. And with the lyric part of it, enhance the visuals, mm-hmm. the images that people are receiving as they read my work.
Now, I saw on your website that some of your poems have actually been put to music.
Yeah. There's been, I think, 4 different composers who've done that, which is amazing to me. I mean, I listen to whatever they do, and I'm completely stunned by it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not critical. I, you know, it just, amazes me.
Well, this, the question I have is then, is it the same music you heard in your head when you were writing?
No, no. In fact, that's a really good thing to ask because the rhythm is completely different when they set it to music. Yeah, they're you know, the composers are working on their own rhythms, and it's not the rhythm that I'm hearing. Because that's another element that I work really hard on in the poems, is to have, without using da-dun-da-dun-da-dun-da-dun, the old rhymey-chimey stuff that they used to do in the 18th and 19th centuries, but I'm trying to get rhythm in it. I'm trying to get the natural rhythm of speech. When it's set to music, it's a different kind of rhythm.
Yeah.
It's just something else.
It's like, oh, yeah, it must be like seeing like a music video or something of your... So now when you read that poem that was set to music, do you hear it differently now that you've heard their music?
Not really. I still hear my own voice.
You still hear your own.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that I love so much about your work is you have so many visual metaphors and allusions. Have you dabbled in painting or do you paint?
You know, that is also a really great comment. Once, I think it was maybe a review of my first book, someone sent me a review before sending it to the journal. Mm-hmm. That's kind of, they shouldn't have done that. But in that review, the man mentioned, so Barbara Crooker, who's a painter and who does this and that, no, that's totally not true. I love painting. I was an art history minor as an undergraduate. I love going to museums. I love going to art galleries. But it's just something I love. It's not something I can do.
Yeah, but your work is full of these images that I carry around with me for days after I read them.
Well, thank you. I mean, a couple of people have called me painterly, and that would definitely be something I'm aspiring to.
Mm-hmm. A lot of your poems also seem to, and I don't really know much about your personal life except what you put out there on the net and stuff. So I'm assuming it's for public consumption.
It has to be, doesn't
okay.
it?
But it's a lot about relationships.
Sure.
And your mother, your children. And somehow it seems like you never get sentimental. It's about loss and pain, but it's not sentimental. How do you do that?
You know, it's just such a tough line to be standing on. And some famous writer, whose name I'm not going to bring up right now, said it's something like you're standing on a knife edge. You're risking sentimentality. You just don't want to fall over onto that side that is sentimental. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of my subject matter is probably initially already highly charged and could be sentimental. Death of a mother, death of my first child, death of my first marriage. But I want to write about things in a way that moves an audience, but without being sentimental, which is a false way to move an audience.
Right, with cliches.
With cliches and things that have been done before.
Yeah.
So I want to keep it as fresh as I can. My second book, Line Dance, was about the kind of connections that you have and the connections that are broken.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the theme of that book.
Right. And Gold, that was your third book.
Gold is the fourth.
Oh, the fourth book.
The fourth book. And that's about a large part of it's the death of my mother.
Right.
And the path through mourning afterwards.
And it made me so happy when I read it. I don't know.
Well,
I don't know
perfect.
Why.
That's perfect.
I guess I kept thinking, well, she did this, so there's words to get through it. Maybe that's it. You gave me the words that I could think about it in my own life and get through
okay,
it.
Okay, thanks. Yeah. I mean, that is one of the jobs of poetry, I think. You know, when September 11th happened, what did people pass around on the internet? They didn't pass around little snippets from the news. They passed around poems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's one of poetry's jobs.
To do that.
In an ironic kind of way, one of the poems in that book is based on Marshmallow Peeps, and now I am the overall receptacle of everything Peeps.
Oh, really?
People send me audio clips, visual clips,
right.
Articles about Peeps.
They think you're a collector now.
Well, because they know that my mother loved Peeps,
and
you know, and there is that poem about it, which is actually a very sad poem in some levels, and then not sad in some others.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, I'd have to say, in general, you gave me a different way to look at life. I mean, I guess that is a poet's job to give people the vocabulary to experience things, to see what to slow down and sort of see the moment that they are.
Yeah.
Well, now that it's so hot and muggy out there,
I know it's awful.
And one of the poems that you've written that really evokes summer, and actually being a teenager in my mm-hmm. first job in mm-hmm. summer, was Patty at the Charcoal Grill. Is that?
It's Patty's Charcoal Drive-In. That was the name of the place.
The place.
Yes.
Did you actually work there?
Oh, yes. This actually was my first job. And in the 7th or 8th line, I talk about the first night of mixed orders. Mm-hmm. It was also the owner of Patty's. He bought it from someone else. It was his first business. He never told us we needed to write down on our slip some way of identifying the car to which the burgers and shakes were going.
Oh, really?
And we wrote down things maybe like cute boy in convertible, oh, right. which could have applied to 7 or 8 cars. And that first night was really quite a mess.
Okay, great. Okay, can we hear that?
I would love to
read
it.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Sure. Patty's Charcoal Drive-In. First job. In tight black shorts and a white bowling shirt, red lipstick and bouncing ponytail, I present each overflowing tray as if it were a banquet. I'm 16 and college bound. This job's temporary as the summer sun, but right now it's the boundaries of my life. After the first few nights of mixed orders and missing cars, the work goes easily. I take out the silver trays and hook them to the windows, inhale the mingled smells of seared meat patties, salty ketchup, rich, sweet malteds. The lure of grease drifts through the thick night air. And it's always summer at Patty's Charcoal Drive-In. Carloads of blonde and tan girls pull up next to red convertibles, boys in black t-shirts and slick hair. Everyone knows what they want. And I wait on them, hoping for tips, loose pieces of silver flung carelessly as the stars. Doo-wop music streams from the jukebox, and each night repeats itself, faithful as a steady date. Towards 10 p.m., traffic dwindles. We police the lot, pick up wrappers. The dark pours down, sticky as coke, but the light from the kitchen gleams like a beacon. A breeze comes up chasing papers in the far corners of the darkened lot, as if, suddenly, a cold wind had started to blow straight at me from the future. I read that in a Doris Lessing book, but right now, purse fat with tips, the moon sitting like a cheeseburger on a flat black grill, this is enough. Your order, please.
I love it. Thank you.
I love that you laughed in just the right place.
My favorite line is that in that poem is, everyone knows what they want. Mm. And it's like when you're 16, it's like, it's a little different. Okay, we're going to take, this is a good place to take a break. I'm Beshiva Monk. This is Lehigh Valley Arts Salon.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. For more information, visit wdiy.org.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I'm Bathsheba Monk. We're talking tonight to poet Barbara Crooker, who's poems are included in the new book, the anthology, called The Liberal Media Made Me Do It, Poetic Responses to NPR and PBS Stories, which is edited by Robbie Nestor. So this is a very evocative title, Barb.
Isn't it great? I love it.
And how did this come to be? How did it come into being?
That part I don't actually know. I saw the call for it. Mm-hmm. And anybody who is asking for poems about NPR and PBS has my attention, because that's pretty much the only TV I watch and the only radio I listen to.
Mm-hmm. Well, I noticed that this book is, I was reading a little bit in the introduction, and the editor said that they wanted to do the whole book themselves, and they realized it was kind of overwhelming because I guess they had a few poems that, is Robbie a woman or a man?
A woman.
A woman that she had done. And then she finally realized that she wanted other perspectives on this subject. And what it really is it's their responses, their poetic responses to specific stories mm-hmm. that were in featured on NPR and PBS. Mm-hmm. And what I found so interesting is, NPR is always accused of having a certain bias.
Right.
And yet, when you read these stories, they're just human stories. And that's what I found the responses to be in all of these. And anyway, the book is...
Exactly.
It's broken up into different sections. The news, people... let me see what other ones they have here. Science, epiphanies, and et cetera. And the ones that I found myself gravitating towards were epiphanies, which is
which is
where yours are included in there too. But if you don't mind, I'd like to ask you to read, before you read some of your own, are two other ones that were also included in Epiphany. One is a response to a story on All Things Considered about spouses on the campaign trail, and this was the presidential campaign in 2007, and this was written by Marie Kane, and it's called Radio Interview. If you would please read that for us.
Sure. I just thought I would also mention this one doesn't have any commentary, but some of the poems have a little commentary before them about what inspired them or how they started working on this. Mm-hmm. This came from All Things Considered, October 17th, 2007. Radio interview. Ann Romney's missionary voice beams from some NPR studio across inaccessible stars and blue-black space while I drive on in the coming dark, anxious to arrive home before my vision fades, before my leg brace constricts my calf, before spasms. She crows, I have no MS symptoms and haven't for years, and credits rest, healthy meals, acupuncture, and reflexology for her symptom-free life. Why, she feels protected from that evil, eating fruits and whole grains and resting with her feet up on a cushion. Sometimes she has to just stop and rest, while I grimace and regret the ice cream, rue the wine, lament those missed naps. No daily or weekly shots for her. Steroids are hideous, and the hope of stem cells? Stem cells, uttered like a loathsome curse. Well, she hopes research halts before any more innocent lives are taken in the name of science. I envision her heeled shoes winking as her rose-tipped toes slip in before she launches back home to ride Baron, her show horse. Riding fights fatigue and stress. Then I am yelling at the radio, pounding the steering wheel at that nail-driven home voice so much, like the roaring page, the bastard blues. I want to propel Baron through an unlatched gate, his tail a free flag in the wind, push that smiling voice down a flight of stone steps until those fancy shoes fly, and punch my hand through her smug assumption that she knows exactly how to manage MS, never acknowledging that my MS might be a different animal altogether. Lights on our cedar trees appear and disappear in the growing wind. I turn onto our gravel driveway, silence the car, clamber awkwardly out, stand supported by my quad cane and leg brace, and admit that I so desperately want, oh, how I want, oh, oh, with my heart in my mouth, oh, how I want to be her.
Thank you.
Now, that was a prose poem, just in case, the audience clearly can't see this. It says one big chunk of prose with Anne's statements in italics, in a different voice, mm-hmm. that are interwoven in there.
Yes. What I particularly like about this, though, it's such a response, really,
Absolutely.
To the radio.
Sure. And
I think I have that same response when I'm listening to the radio, interviews. It's almost personal, and... especially when I'm driving in the car, when I'm making dinner or something.
Right. And I mean, this really exemplifies, I think, that old statement that the personal is political, because this person had a very personal, visceral response.
Right.
And not to the politics of it, really, but to the management of the disease.
Right. That the person on the radio was assuming that
because
she could do this, everybody could do this.
Right.
There was another poem here that I would like you to read, if you don't mind. And this is by Rupert Fike. It's called In the Depths of the Recession. And it's in response to a program on NPR that you've actually been on, the Writer's Almanac.
Oh, right. Okay. Yes.
So
my favorite show.
Right, I know. Because I love you. Okay, so if you would please read that one. That's his response to
The Writer's Almanac on December 2008. Okay. Mm-hmm. In the depths of the recession, I'm reduced to crawling in an attic, sealing squirrel holes for a tough customer. I don't want to see any daylight up there. And my paint-spattered radio's going with first Brahms, then the Writer's Almanac, as I soldier squirm through insulation, dragging flashing to screw over fascia, gaps ringed by gnaw marks, which is when I hear that today's poem is by Cecilia. Cecilia, we critiqued work all last fall around that table, sometimes with wine. We stayed up late election night toasting. And now, in these lines, she's on a Prague bridge, lost in thought, looking down when a man approaches, says, "Don't jump," before he proposes marriage on the spot. You can tell old Garrison likes that line. I've stopped squirming to listen, to push aside a long-dead rat in its last trap. But don't worry. This is not a lament that her words put girdles round the world while I'm up here with skeletal remains, warring with creatures who won't fight fair. She has chosen her bridge, I my attic, where I'm nodding along, as always, to stay in touch and do good work. When I see sunlight pinholing its way through two more gaps in the far corner eaves, and I'm grunting my way over there to do good work, I'm thinking of Kipling on his just-announced birthday, how I'd memorized "if" in the sixth grade with its caution against coveting others' lives. Or did I? I can't remember. I'm crawling.
Thank you.
Just in case some of the listeners don't know about the Writer's Almanac, it not only has a poem every day, but it also has just some very short snippets about things that have happened on that day in history. And you can sign up for it online. Our local stations don't actually carry it. The closest one is Scranton, but you can listen online.
Uh-huh. Oh, great.
And you can receive it daily in your inbox.
Oh, great. That's good daily inspiration, right? So, We're gonna read some of your poems now. This is the one I like, a poem on a line by Anne Sexton. We are all writing God's poem, and it came from notes when you were driving. You said, "Tell us about the genesis of this poem."
Well, I probably should first offer a disclaimer, which is that it's not actually a very smart thing to do writing notes while you're driving a standard shift car.
Right.
But I do it all the time.
Okay.
And I was driving down I-81. Going to the Virginia Center for the Creative Arts, which is a colony I've gone to. So I'm not really sure what station I was listening to. I just start scanning the left-hand side of the dial when I'm driving, trying to find NPR. And when this phrase just jumped out at me, I wrote it in my notebook. Wherever I'm traveling, I try to find NPR. And if I hear, say, Cokie Roberts or Mani Moscowane, I feel like I'm driving with my friends.
You are. Okay.
Poem on a Line by Anne Sexton. We are all writing God's poem. Today, the sky's the soft blue of a work shirt washed 1,000 times. The journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. On the interstate, listening to NPR, I heard a Hubble scientist say, "The universe is not only stranger than we think, it's stranger than we can think." I think I've driven into spring as the woods revive with a loud shout, redbud trees, their gaudy scarves flung over bark's bare limbs. Barely doing 60, I pass a trailer called Glory Bound, and aren't we just? Just yesterday, I read Li Po, "There is no end of things in the heart, but it seems like things are always ending. Vacation or childhood, relationships, stores going out of business, like the one that sold jeans that really fit. And where do we fit in? How can we get up in the morning knowing what we do? But we do, put one foot after the other, open the window, make coffee, watch the steam curl up and disappear. At night, the scent of phlox curls in the open window, while the sky turns red-violet, lavender, thistle, a box of spilled crayons. The moon spills its milk on the black tabletop for the 1,000th time."
Oh, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That was fabulous. I don't think we're going to have
time for stock
no,
market?
No, we're not going to have time for that. But let's hear, I know you're going to be at the Dodge Poetry Festival. Let's hear about that. Where is that?
Well,
when?
That's a huge gathering of poets, which is now in Newark. And if you Google the Dodge Poetry Festival, you'll find information online. It's the last towards the end of October.
Okay, all right.
And so, I don't know my date yet.
Okay, great. So that's going to be very exciting, and they're very happy to have you, I'm sure. And where can they find out more about you, Barbara?
Well, I have a website, barbaracrooker.com, and there's also a little button if you'd like to contact me there.
Oh, great. Okay.
Links to my email.
All right. I'm sure everybody will. And and to buy the book, The Liberal Media Made Me Do It. Where can people buy that book?
I know it's on Amazon and also Lummox, L-U-M-M-O-X, press.com.
Okay. We'd like to thank you, Barbara Krueger, for being with us tonight.
Well, I'd like to thank you for having me. This is delightful.
Great. Thank you. This is Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I'm Bathsheba Monk.